Hello, I'm Will Shires, and this is Talking Trucks. In this episode, I'm going to be chatting with John Fletcher. He's the MD of family-owned Dawson Group Truck and Trailer. We're going to be discussing the challenges faced by rental companies, in particular those around decarbonisation. It was recorded in Dawson Group's new Avonmouth depot, and John's also going to talk to me about a few of the interesting vehicles I spotted in the yard. John, thank you very much for joining me. First of all, can you tell us a bit about the Dawson Group? Tell us what you do and what the company's all about.
Yeah, thanks. Dawson Group is it's a family-owned business. It's been around for quite some time. Established as a family haulage business back in 1935 in Leighton Buzzard. And since then, it's grown through being a Volvo distributor to the truck rental business that we're probably more familiar with, and then has divested into various other interests, kind of related into transport. That's cold storage, bus and coach, vans, and then more recently the EMC business plus finance.
Just tell us, what is EMC?
EMC is our recently rebranded business. That's environmental, municipal and civil. So quite a diverse portfolio of businesses. I just look after the truck and trailer business. It still represents probably about half of the group's overall revenues. Unfortunately, not all of its profits, but that's another story. But that business is in itself has grown, evolved, and become something completely different over the years. And yes, you know, fundamentally started off as a truck rental business, and then trailers added to the portfolio. And as we've grown, we've also expanded into a wider portfolio, plus become a lot more sort of focused on sort of contract hire as our primary offer, which is, you know, where we see ourselves now. Business is probably around about 70-75% contract hire to rental. Rental's still a very important part of that, by the way, but it isn't the mainstay of the business. I'm the managing director of this business. I've been in Dawson Group now for 22 years. Started off on the ground up in Manchester as a regional manager, and then came down to Milton Keynes some years ago as operations director, and for the last 11 years I've been the MD, which has been probably the dream job, really, and a great place to work. And I've really enjoyed my career at Dawson's.
Okay, so how many sites have you got? And tell us a little about this site we're in now.
Yeah, sure. We operate from 24 sites throughout the UK. We just opened our newest opening in Hull, which just came online earlier this year, which has been quite long in the gestation, but we got there in the end. We're sat in our Avonmouth site at the moment. Now, we share this with four other group businesses. This is a wholly owned site. We sit on 7 acres of brownfield land with a newly developed building and very, very complete setup here with, you know, workshops and all the facilities that we have for the four operating businesses from here. Those businesses being ourselves, the truck and trailer business, our van business, the EMC business, and the TCS cold storage business. Okay. And from this site, we operate, or, you know, within basically the wider sort of southwest area. We support satellites in Cardiff and Exeter from here for the truck and trailer business.
Got you. Now, the last few years have been unprecedented. Brexit, COVID, increasing costs, vehicle shortages, the war in Ukraine. How have you coped?
Well, we've coped. I mean, we're still here, and if anything, you know, we've come out of it kicking, and we're stronger as a business from it. COVID was a torrid time for everybody, and I think the early days of it in particular, when we were looking at rafts and rafts and rafts of vehicles sort of coming back and contracts being renegotiated and stopped and so on and so forth. It was a very, very difficult time, and it was probably as close to thinking that, you know, is this how it all sort of finishes, and as, you know, as well structured and managed as a business as we are, that if your customer's no longer there and they've got no longer any business, then things will come to a certain close. But we came through that very, very quickly. And I think as soon as demand shifted towards online, you know, it was quite clear that people needed to gear up to provide online, and we were there, readily to support that. And actually since then, you know, we've not really looked back. We've very, very high utilization levels, too high, really, if the truth be told, because it doesn't leave us enough equipment to feed opportunity. You know, we are a, you know, we're a sales-led business. You know, our guys are hungry to go out knocking on doors, meet new people, bring new customers on board, and to transact. And that's been denied because, you know, largely the supply issues of new vehicles, which have been quite poor over that period of time, as you're probably aware, and also just the tight utilisation levels of our existing fleet. And as that fleet's ageing, you know, we're having to sell it to bring in new equipment. Well, you know, we're selling it, but not necessarily being able to replace it.
I see.
Again, further tightening the fleet. But you know, we've more than survived the COVID piece. The post-COVID piece is the one that's proving more challenging. The initial piece afterwards, as we were starting to sort of remodel the businesses to cope with new consumer demands and things from online, which now seems to be sort of drifting off. You see what Amazon are doing. They're actually shutting sheds and they're looking at sort of retracting a little bit. I think that pattern you're seeing across a lot of the retailers, plus a general sort of easing off with this, so say, recession that we're talking ourselves into.
Yep.
The you know, the business is now having to sort of remodel how it looks. But given that there are still some real distinct shortages of vehicles, our forward orders has probably never been stronger. We've got a lot of vehicles on order and anticipate that those will be joining fleet, you know, throughout this year and next as those orders start being fulfilled.
Yeah, that's good to hear. The latest challenge, of course, decarbonisation. Are your customers asking much about zero tailpipe emission trucks?
I would say pretty much every customer is interested to some point, and some are absolutely fascinated to the point where they may have been mandated, maybe mandated by their own internal targets for decarbonisation. Some of the large consumer type businesses, you know, I'm guessing there's some global European type enterprises there that will be they'll be very much mandating and targeting reduction within their supply chain and various other things, which then downstream brings on to conversations on to us to try and help to assist that. Those types of conversations are happening on a very, very regular basis. But everyone's curious, and everyone's curious to see that, is this a weird point where there's a, you know, a credible alternative to a diesel or to whatever it is we're using now that people can use at cost parity? You can very quickly get to a sort of a conclusion of that conversation that no, there isn't, and without being too blunt about it, that there's no immediate, you know, stepping stone of, you know, one cost versus the other. It's the two distinct pieces. And plus the various infrastructure that supports that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I seem to recall you had a try before you buy policy with Euro 6, and you invested rather heavily whilst some of your competitors were still steaming into Euro 5.
Yeah.
Are you doing a similar thing with electric trucks?
We will do, and we're probably a bit more cautious about it than perhaps we were with Euro 6, but Euro 6, if you recall, was mandated with no choice about it, and it was there overnight that, you know, you'd gone from Euro 5 to Euro 6. And, you know, I think if we've been truthful about it, we probably didn't quite get to order enough Euro 5, so we had to order the Euro 6, and we made a very good campaign out of that, because what we didn't realise was that there were other benefits for Euro 6, that actually they were more fuel efficient. And when you talk about fuel efficiency, you're talking then in pounds, shillings and pence. It kind of supported that transition, although you're talking then about a vehicle that was probably 10% more expensive than the one it was replacing. When you're talking one that's you know, 200-300% more expensive, slightly different argument.
Yeah. Going back to the Euro 6 thing, I remember the manufacturers made us all believe that they were going to be far more complex, far thirstier.
Yeah.
And of course, none of that materialised. It didn't.
And that story was they held tight until the last of the Euro 5s had rolled out of the yard. Oddly enough.
Yeah. And then that's right. So electric trucks roughly cost about three times the price of diesel trucks. So can the hire rate be three times as expensive, or do the hirer and the operator have to sort of split the pain and the gain on this one?
Well, it's an interesting one, because ultimately, you know, the capital is always the starting point for the hire rate. So yes is the short answer to that, that rate would need to reflect the capital cost of the equipment. But there are other things that sit in there as well, which is the operating cost of the equipment, which also make up the rate. And the large and very unknown piece in this, which is the third component of the rate, is the residual value. And until we really know and have a good handle on what that residual value looks like, most people are going to be modelling this thing to sort of run over a lifespan to end and find a way of putting a cost model together to make that acceptable.
Yeah, yeah. So can the freight transport sector afford zero emissions, or rather like the bus sector, should there be incentives, subsidies?
I think it's very easy for us to say, oh, there should be incentives, but who's going to pay for those? And, you know, the government that can't mend the potholes in the road at the moment are barely going to come up with an incentive or some strategy to do that.
Yeah.
You know, they've set off on the folly to build HS2 when that money, or even a fifth of that money, would probably have gone a long way towards decarbonising the road transport infrastructure. But you know, we're set with that now. We can't do much about it. It's going to happen. Will there be any further support or whatever? I think there'll have to be. The manufacturers have got their own initiatives and their own urgencies to fulfil. You know, building new electric vehicles, and Vectors a big piece for them that's driving them. But where's the pull? There's the push. There's no pull from within the transport sector. The grants that the governments are offering are very, very poor in comparison to our European cousins and what they're going to get. So the incentives are really, really low, quite weak. I can't see how right now anybody would be thinking that this is the way they're going to operate their transport business, unless their pure, you know, sort of USP is going to be by doing it, you know, on a net carbon basis and charging for the pleasure of doing that.
Yeah. So TCOs are likely to be comparative with diesel over something like 7 to 10 years. Does that mean rental terms are going to change from, you know, a typical 5 year to 7 or 10?
Yeah, it's interesting because you know, we look at how, you know, even now a diesel truck is built for a 7 year plus life, isn't it? And actually, if you look at the average rental terms for, you know, a contract, it's probably sub 3 years. So those don't match. So is it likely that they're going to match on an electric? Probably not. And reality is that the operations change, operators change, routes change. You've got to have the ability and the agility to switch the equipment to do what it needs to do, you know, or for you at that particular time. And I think actually it could actually lend itself more to our type of model, because you're a longer life asset and a shorter contract. The two things are immiscible. Therefore, you know, you just need to pay for the usership of it for the period of the contract, and then, you know, that's for us to rehome it on something and find a repurpose for it within something that probably, you know, again, fits that particular purpose if your primary contract's moved or switched or has become something different.
Yeah. So what is the used electric truck market going to look like in 10 years?
I don't know, it'd be quite interesting. And I wonder if it'll take shape in the similar way that perhaps, you know, rail infrastructure, where you've got things being, you know, refurbished and relived for extended periods.
Yeah.
You know, this talk of batteries being needed for power farms and such as this, and for battery banks, power banks, all of that other good stuff. But I haven't actually seen where those markets exist yet. So it's probably fair to say there is going to be still some residual value to each of the, you know, the components of the vehicle. It renders the chassis pretty useless, though, if you've got no means of powering it. So, how we view this and how we life the vehicles will largely depend on how we see the first ones operating. And, you know, if you expect that due to regeneration you're going to be using less braking, and perhaps there's going to be less wear and tear on some of the axle componentry and things like that, then, you know, perhaps you could see a chassis that would outlive, you know, a couple of power packs, or the power packs outlive a couple of chassis. I don't know quite which way around it's going to work.
Yeah. Mm. I was speaking to a few operators now who are saying that their plans to run them for 10 years and then after 6 years have a complete refurb.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, you might be putting a new driver's seat in it and some new curtains, but that isn't going to keep your driver happy, is it?
I think that's that you're not getting away from that. We're ageist, aren't we? And you know, we put a number on the front of the vehicles that tells everybody how old it is, and you know, it's an emotive piece. You need a human being to sit behind the wheel of it. He needs to be proud to do that, and he needs to be, you know, feeling that he's loved and cared for, and You know, hopping into a 10-year-old truck isn't necessarily a good way of showing that to somebody at the moment.
No, no, that's right. Mm. So operators tell me short-term truck rentals have almost disappeared, and you can't rent a truck for less than 6 months. Is that true?
To some extent, I think there's some truth in that. I think the market tightened. As I was saying to you before, that you know we were still committed to selling trucks. We weren't able to replace them, so we tightened the amount of fleet that was available. But I think all operators recognised that as lead times were extending, they needed to do something in the interim. And most operators, savvy operators, you know, took vehicles on extended terms rather than just taking on an ad hoc term. They converted those ad hoc terms into sort of contracts to see them through to new vehicles coming through. So it took up a lot of the rental capacity that went in that in being able to try and mitigate those lead times from the manufacturers. That capacity is being taken up by the rental fleet per se. So the fact that there's no rental vehicles is probably more of a product that there's no vehicles, there is the supply has been limited. It's balancing a little bit, and you know we've had a plan in place for quite some time now to sort of push shorter term contracts and get some more stuff into the rental fleet post its initial contract. And we need rental fleet. We absolutely do need it. We need it for several reasons. Mainly, the first reason is to support our year-round contract customers, the guys that you know, loyal to us throughout. When they've got seasonal peaks or they need to augment their own fleet demands, we've got the rental fleet there for that. But also to generate new business. You know, we are a business that thrives on developing new business, and we find our best customers come from that background. They start renting from us, maybe on an ad hoc basis, and then we get familiarity, we like what they see, we build a relationship, and then, you know, before we know it, we grow them into a fully-fledged contract hire customer. And, you know, probably some of our best customers have come through from that route.
I see. Going back to the electric trucks, I'm just thinking then, how can you possibly set a rate when you haven't got a clue what the value is going to be in several years' time?
I think we've got to take a best guess at that. And I think the estimates have got to sit that, you know, there's you can draw a linear curve as to what you expect a depreciation of a normal vehicle will be. You can overlay that as something similar for an electric vehicle and mess around with the dynamic of that. But ultimately, it's got to have some inherent value at the end of it. You assume that if it gets down past a period of 7-8 years, it's still 80%, you know, viable. It can still do something. It's got to still have some use to somebody. And actually, you know, if these vehicles do prove to be as reliable as we would like them to be, at 7-8 years old, it could be quite good value for somebody if you take that as being, you know, less than half the price of the new one, and equally as capable of doing what the new one could.
I see. Okay. Personally, I think there's still life left in diesel. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely would. I think that diesel is, whichever way you look at it, is still here for a while yet to come. Even if we were to be able to get on stream to decarbonise and to drive to 2035 at the pace that the government would want, legacy of diesel will stay around for some time thereafter. That, you know, even if every new vehicle after 2035, rigid vehicle, let's say 2040, bring it forward to every vehicle, 40,000 of them, there's still 450,000 of them out there. It's going to be quite some while before they all sort of mature through the market and disappear altogether. So diesel is here for some time to come, no doubt about it. And our strategy really is going to be about doing diesel better. There are things now that we can do that can help operators to save money and to save carbon and to drive their ESG agenda without having to break the bank of going buying electric vehicles.
Okay.
And I think that we should not ever overlook good in pursuit of perfect. And yes, whilst we all want to live in a perfect world, a better world would be good for us, a good start for me. And us getting into a place where we can work and partner with customers to just make incremental savings. And savings on, you know, carbon reduction make instant savings to the operator in terms of fuel costs. There are further benefits that we can bring in. Refrigeration is an area that we're working quite hard with at the moment. And I think we've got a way there of bringing what was previously the non-road mobile machinery stuff, the fridge engine, if you like, and to decarbonise that. We've got a couple of strings that help there, and to take that into a sort of a, either to work independently on electric or to work as a slave from the truck. Either way, you're converting what was a stage 5 into what is going to be Euro 6 or better. And there you're talking about, you know, massive gains in terms of your NOx and your other particulate emissions and everything else that goes with it. Absolutely huge gains, particularly when you're in urban environments. So there are areas here where we can very, very quickly make some really, really good progress without having to go off and buy 300 grand's worth of electric truck that you don't know is going to work or do anything for you.
And also financial gains for the operator, because with red diesel gone, it's...
Absolutely, and everyone's been completely focused on that since April last year. And, you know, I think most were focused prior to that, but now, you know, that really firmly fixes the focus on you know, getting more out of those secondary engines and things.
Whose fridge motors do you buy, or do you use a?
We use a mix. I mean, primarily we're Carrier. That's our largest supplier. You know, we've had a long-standing relationship with Carrier. It's worked very well for us over the years, and that's built up around the relationship we have with them, the backup, the support, the actual product, and the market's acceptance of that product, which is very, very high. And the secondary market acceptance as well when it comes to use, which is equally high. Having said that, you know, there are challenger brands there that we're also very keen to support. We bought a good number of Hultstein, which is a Swedish direct drive manufacturer, and we've got those on our fleet. And also, obviously, the other mainstream, Thermo King, and the likes of. So, you know, we're a broad mix. We're not, you know, we try to be sort of dual or triple branded wherever we possibly can, because we don't want to be reliant on any one, and nor do our customers want us to see us as just being, you know, X manufacturer rental. They want a more agnostic view of what it is. And I think from our point of view, and it goes across the truck fleet as well as this stuff, that our credibility stands on our independence and our ability to pick the right piece of equipment for that particular duty, for that particular role, cycle, whatever it is that you're doing with it.
And the same philosophy applies to buying trucks and trailers, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You spread it across a few different manufacturers.
We do. We absolutely do. I think, you know, probably slightly different with dry freight. You know, we've had a long-standing relationship with Lawrence David over a number of years, but trailers is a bit more of a bespoke manufactured piece of equipment, and I guess that, you know, Lawrence David is a manufacturing business that's building our trailer, and rather than us buying their trailer, it's a little bit of a different relationship. But with the trucks, you know, we do certainly sort of spread that across as, you know, a number of marks. But equally, we don't want to be spread too thin, because we need to be able to build up, you know, good support, good network, and you know, sort of have a better, more solid understanding of each bit of equipment that we do operate.
Yeah, and we just touched on the 2035 deadline for diesel. Do you think that's realistic? Do you think the government should be pushing that back 5 years or so?
I think it's. It sounds like it's coming, and whether they're likely to sort of change, because, you know, the those bleaters from the road transport industry have been at it again. I doubt it. When people like Porsche start sort of rattling on the European Commission's doorstep and telling them that make some exceptions for us, they're listening. And all of a sudden, that if you can, you know, if you're prepared to pay for you know, sort of a HVO equivalent fuel for your Porsche, you can carry on building an ICE. Will they at some point take a view similar with the diesel combustion engine in road transport? Don't know. We're an easy target, aren't we? And I think that you know, there's an element of government will just take a view of shut up and stop bleating, and we either got to sort of take a much sterner stance against them and lobby better for, as I say, good to perfect, rather than trying to adopt perfect and giving up everything that we've got in between.
Yeah. Something I wanted to ask you about was lead times. Yeah. I mean, we all know it's been horrendous over the last year or two. Are things improving?
Yes and no. I think we see them improving in certain areas. I think, you know, light commercials seem to be coming a little bit quicker. Heavy commercials definitely are not. Trailers have definitely sped up a little bit, but generally lead times are still poor. You know, we're looking at 15 months on a lot of equipment, and that's not really, it's not tenable. You can't carry on sort of modelling a fleet replacement program that we're trying to fashion where we keep a fleet under 3 years old, based on, you know, making judgment calls of something that's almost going to be 50% through its life by the time it comes to us, if it had arrived in time. But we're seeing other areas here where the pressure is coming from. Subcomponent manufacturers, you know, refrigeration, tail lifts, all these things are equally under pressure and are holding up and delaying vehicles. You know, our work in progress at the moment is significant. We've got a colossal number of vehicles work in progress. Now, you consider a chassis, you know, we only get a limited amount of credit from the manufacturer for that, and then we have to pay for it. So our work in progress and our cash tied up in a lot of assets that are at the moment, you know, not in a position where they're finished. They are just work in progress.
I see. And something else I wanted to ask you about was Ryder. When they pulled out of the UK, did you pick up much of the business?
Well, we've seen some business from that. I mean, we didn't directly buy any of the outgoing assets and contracts that went with them. We engaged with a number, but reality is that it wasn't going to benefit us to go and buy somebody else's problems, and it certainly wouldn't have benefited our customers. And I think, you know, Ryder have timed it pretty well to stage the exit, and, you know, good luck to them. They've done that on for whatever reason they did. But, you know, we had a plan of our own. We were executing that plan. It didn't really sort of fit within our business to sort of expand from where we were into that space or to take on any more of that work. So we just stuck to doing what we were doing. And yes, you know, as a result of that, yes, we have seen an uplift in some business. And, you know, we've been very pleased to speak to some ex-Ryder customers that have been probably new to us from recent years, and it's been interesting. Been very interesting.
Do you think we'll see any more exits from the UK market?
It's difficult to say. I think in our space, I can't see that anybody would be surrendering their position in our space just at the moment. However, you know, in the longer term view of asset management, if your business is completely and utterly beholden on the internal combustion engine and you perceive that that's going to be history, then, you know, perhaps there are businesses with another view that perceive that that's not where they want to be anymore. It'll be interesting to see whether that pans out or not.
I wanted to chat with you about Road Transport Expo.
Yeah.
You came last year.
We did, yeah.
And you're coming again this year.
Yeah, we are. Absolutely we are. That was a really easy decision for us. And, you know, we as much as thoroughly enjoying the being out and about and amongst like-minded people and having that number of people rubbing shoulders together, which was a real sort of tonic for us all, we got some good quality leads out of it and met some really interesting people, had some great discussions, and I've seen some good business on the back of it. So I think as a bit of a no-brainer, really. Yeah, we're there, back there in a heartbeat, for sure.
Whilst we're here, can we have a look around the yard? Because I can see some interesting vehicles out the window there.
Yeah, there is some very interesting stuff to show you. And we talked about electric. There are a few bits and pieces to see there on that front. But there are also some of our doing diesel better vehicles in there. In particular, one that I'd like to show you, which is a tractor unit with an eco-drive power unit, which is a generator, effectively drives a fridge unit, fridge trailer behind it. We'll have a look at that. But another vehicle I want to show you is something that is more mundane, more prosaic perhaps, which is what used to be a mainstay of our industry. It's the old 7.5 tonner.
Yeah.
And, you know, should be dead, but it's not. And we've got a sort of a resurgence of interest with a variant of that, which is the little Iveco Daily 7.2 ton. Cracking little vehicle because it's as car-like to drive as anything you've ever driven. Really comfortable little place to work. And it manages a pretty decent payload. At 7.2 tons, you're managing over 3 ton of payload on a curtain side body with a tail lift, which is pretty significant. Now, if you consider the number of grandfather rights people out there still now that could drive that vehicle, that could take a lot of pressure off the vocational driver shortages. And particularly when you put that into an urban environment where the larger vehicle, you struggle to get that tipped on a full load basis anyway because of the traffic situation and how slowly it goes.
Yeah.
So I think there's a vehicle here that there's still got a bit more life in it yet. And perhaps maybe as a you know, this Brexit thing that none of us voted for and all these benefits that none of us yet seen, perhaps we can just say that we don't need to have you know, license holders vocational above 7.5 ton, perhaps. And the other point, which is, you know, if you consider way back when, and particularly when go back to the days when my early days in this industry, there was a rite of passage that you'd start on the 7.5 tonner, perhaps, you know, be a youngish fella or lady or whoever it's going to be, that would come, they would get used to how the vehicle's loaded, operated, get used to how to operate the taco, they get used to actually whether they want to work in the transport industry and waiting around and being treated like crap. And then they would then possibly they catch the boss's eye, and then before you know it, they get put through the HGV, and then they're the next HGV driver. So there's a lot of use for that vehicle, which I think has been overlooked, and some secondary uses, which we probably just need to sort of shine a light onto a little bit more.
Great, let's go and look at them.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Right, so we're in the Iveco now. How many of these are you taking?
This will be probably around about, takes up to nearly 300 of these now on fleet.
Well, really?
We've got a good number. It's grown over the years as a sort of increasingly popular bit of kit, and we've still got a further good number to order. But also, it's quite a short cycle vehicle. We don't keep these very long. I mean, sort of 18 months would be sort of a normal duration. Maybe a touch longer here and there for contracts that we've got specifically. But yeah, definitely something that's taken a firm hold as part of a fleet staple, if you like, for us.
I can see you're still taking the 7.5 ton Eurocargo because there's one.
Yeah,
one
there
next
is
to
one
us.
There. Yeah, there you see it. And I think it's horses for courses. I think you do still see certain operators that kind of want a lorry, and I think we buy that more to appeal for the used market, where the guy wants a lorry rather than particularly, you know, the user of this vehicle or the operator that will be having a need for it. Be a bit agnostic really as to what he gets. He just needs something that's going to move X number of pallets,
yeah.
And he's not really that fussed about the mark. And then they get these and they think, actually, that's quite good because they've got a good payload on them. Driver acceptability is great.
It's auto transmission.
Auto transmission, perfect place to work. It's a, you know, they've got the business pack in them, so they are, you know, there's nothing. If you sat in the cockpit of this, you know, most cars look very, very similar to this. You know, it's got a good car-like feel, very light steering, really super turning circle. You know, a nice little truck, actually. And I think when I haven't done much more than move a few bits from my garage and things in them, but, you know, quite enjoyed it, and it's not a bad place to work. But there are still people that want, you know, a traditional looking 7.5 tonner, and we've also, you know, we in the past had 10 tonners where we plated down to 7.5 ton and played around with these different weight things to try and, you know, optimize sort of payload of those sort of medium heavy ridges which people are increasingly sort of growing fond of. As you can see there, we've got 14 tonners, we've got, you know, 12. There are a lot of different weight profiles that we're looking at that suit these sort of urban applications, you know, very specifically.
Okay. Now, someone has caught my attention here, of course, is this tandem axle Graham Adams trailer. Talk us through that.
Yeah, so it's quite a piece of kit. Probably one of the smaller trailers you see in the yard because it's set up as an urban, but it's a pretty punchy bit of technology there. That's is 100% diesel free, so the refrigeration is entirely electric. Now, that's powered by, as you can see, probably just underneath there, you've got a large battery pack.
Yeah.
And that's a kilowatt battery. And that's driven by a generator within the axle setup there. As you can see, that's a Valks axle with a generator, which then provides constant feed and charge to the battery and to the fridge unit. So it's a completely standalone unit, can operate for about 4.5-5 hours standalone without being on the road, and then once it gets up to a speed of about, I think it's about 18-20 kilometres, it'll start charging and regenerating the battery.
We've got other iterations of that now as well, where we're actually looking at hybrids, where we can, using solar and the battery and also standby electricity, be able to actually bypass the use of the diesel engine altogether, although we can fit it on the current diesel fridges, which we are doing. So it's just powering the electric standby motor. So you've still got, at the worst case, you've still got the diesel fridge that can kick in if it needs to, but the system will always hunt for the cheapest, most economic way of running itself. So if it's in, if it's plugged in at the warehouse, that's what it's going to use. If it's on the road, there's sufficient battery, that's what it'll use. And similarly, because it's solar, it's passively charging away all the time.
Yeah, I see. So how much does that save the operator then?
Well, in terms of fuel use now, I mean, you can imagine that, that most operators are probably using somewhere in the region of about 2,500 fridge hours a year. Depending on what temperature they're running at and what the sort of ambient temperatures are outside there, but you could see savings of potentially, you know, £2,000 or £3,000 is quite a reasonable sort of target. I think if you've got other operations, you can be a bit more ambitious in them savings. You've certainly looked at operators that can save about £4,000 and more per annum, and that's a saving that once you've got it, it keeps paying back to you. It's not something that you've got as a one-off. It's always, and providing diesel stays at the price it is now, that's where it is. Diesel will only go up in price, so actually that saving will become greater as a proportion of the running cost of that vehicle as we go through a sort of no doubt progressive increase in fuel costs.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the first, is it?
And that's one of three initial ones that we bought, and I think we showed the first one last year at RTX, which was a full 13.6 meter eCool fridge. This is the next iteration of that, which is the urban one. We see that being a really good fit because of the urban application, and then we'll be seeing the next pieces, which are the hybrids, and they'll be joining fleet hopefully in time for RTX as well.
Brilliant. Okay. Any other trucks you can talk to us about?
Yeah, there's one that there's, you know, you're looking at a sea of white look-alike-y trucks, and nothing really stands out. They're all sort of, they're quite generic these days, aren't they? But, you know, we were saying before, nobody builds a bad truck, and luckily, you know, we've got a good representation of various marks, which helps us to be able to sort of remain independent, and it also gives us the ability to sort of match the right vehicle to the right application and the right place where it gets support, because that's as important. But standing out in amongst that crowd, you'll just see one with the diamond badge on the front there.
Yeah.
Which is a Renault, not a big mainstay on our fleet, but one that's been introduced latterly. Now, what's interesting about that, it's a 6x2 tractor, nothing special there, but it's been fitted with the Carrier EcoDrive, which is basically it's a generator, which is permanently driven, engine driven by the truck, and that generator then can actually power a fridge trailer that's been pulled behind there, again without using the fridge's secondary diesel engine. The savings obviously are there from not running that engine. You know, the MPG difference on the host tractor is nominal, really, for the difference of what it provides. You've already got it. There's an awful lot of wasted power in trucks, as you know, once they're mobile. So it's not taking too much of that. But the important thing is that you are not using a much dirtier, much less fuel efficient stage 5 at best non-road mobile engine that's behind.
Yeah.
So the actual savings in terms of carbon, yes, significant, but in terms of NOx and emissions and particulates, massive. You're moving from the Euro 5 to Euro 6, that's the old, you know, football pitch to a shoebox kind of analogy of just how far the difference is there that you're moving that.
Okay, now, who's the customer for that one then?
That one's going to a long-standing customer of ours, which is a company called Trewithen Dairies, Cornish Farm Dairies. They've been operating our equipment now for some years, and very forward-thinking business. They like to get involved in new technology, and definitely not scared of having a go at something different. And they see the decarbonisation as a real key USP to them. You know, in being able to deliver their product at very minimal carbon footprint.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. I think I can see just about every mark here, can't I?
Yeah, you can. I think we've got just about everything is represented. You're not a lot of tractor. You can see now that how our business is has grown much, much more towards rigid, which actually represents, if you look at the stats of you know, road, of the population of vehicles on the road, 60-odd percent are rigid, and our fleet is probably balanced in a very similar way, maybe a little bit more weighted towards rigid now than it probably used to be. But you know, we see that's where our sort of specialist area is sort of emerging in being able to work more closely with customers to customise bodies and a whole vehicle package to suit a particular application, rather than necessarily just an off the peg generic tractor unit for standard interurban distribution.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
No problem at all.
If you've been enjoying the Talking Trucks podcast, make sure you keep up to date with the latest news, legal advice, interviews and road tests with Commercial Motor magazine, delivered direct to your door every week. Subscribe today for just £35 per quarter by visiting com-mote.com/podcast. That's com-mote.com/podcast.